This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here's a few front-page headlines from several of today's newspapers. The Washington Post, AIDS cases in the U.S. on the rise. USA Today, Americans less tolerant on gay issues. The New York Times, gay-themed TV gains a wider audience. The Washington Times, Vatican issues guide against gay marriage. Last month, the highest court struck down a sodomy law in the state of Texas. Same-sex marriage became legal in the Canadian province of Ontario, and a gay man was elected bishop in the Episcopal Diocese of New Hampshire. At the same time, the Centers for Disease Control report that the number of Americans developing AIDS does appear to be rising. That reverses a long trend. And this Thursday, the Vatican will issue guidelines for bishops and Catholic politicians to rally opposition to same-sex marriage. Two polls out this month offer up contradictory data on American attitudes towards same-sex marriage. A Pew Research Center poll says support for gay marriage is up, while a CNN USA Today Gallup poll, it's just out today, shows support is down significantly. And on TV, producers have been debuting a spate of gay-themed programs. So what's going on here? What accounts for the shifts up and down in public attitudes about gay life? Give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us from our bureau in New York City is Eric Marcus. He's the author of several books on same-sex issues, including Making Gay History, the Half-Century Fight for Lesbian and Gay Equal Rights. And Eric Marcus, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Neil.
First, let me ask you about these two public opinion polls. The Pew survey conducted earlier this month shows that support for same-sex marriage is up from 7 years ago, 1996, 27%, now 38%. At the same time, a USA Today, a CNN Gallup poll out today shows a decline in tolerance of homosexuality. What is going on here?
Well, I think that for one thing, the pace of change has been so dizzying that that's what we see in the poll that came out today, the USA Today Gallup poll. As I had a look at the poll, and it does show a dramatic drop in support, but I think that simply reflects discomfort and confusion over the issue. There are so many things in the news today and so many decisions being made, and lots of people really don't understand this very well. And for me, and I've followed these issues and covered these issues for 20 years, I find it dizzying, so I can only imagine how the average American finds it. I think it's more important to look at the long-term trends, and that's what's reflected in the Pew poll that you quoted about gay marriage. Over time, over the last several years and over the last several decades, we've seen a dramatic change in public opinion about gay and lesbian people. And we've seen that change come about among young people first, and then as the generations, as people have gotten older, the next generation that's come along has shifted even more. So it concerns me to see a poll like this where there's been such a dramatic drop at one time. But I think it's really just discomfort and confusion. I don't think it's a backlash, as some of the social conservatives would like to say. I think it's wishful thinking on their part, and I hope they don't think it's wishful thinking on my part that it's just discomfort and confusion.
Well, I think it was Gary Bauer, one of those conservatives, who said every time that homosexuals demand cultural and legal acceptance, there's going to be growing resistance.
Yeah, Gary Bauer and I go way back. We shared a page writing a column in the late 1980s about gay marriage, and he was on one side, I was on the other. And I'm sure I said in that piece that I would never live to see the day when gay people would be allowed to marry. And look what's happened next door in Canada. Look what happened in Vermont and what might very well happen in Massachusetts. The world has changed very dramatically. And while Gary Bauer might put it in one way, I might state it another. I think that the world is changing in positive ways for gay and lesbian people. These changes are gradual and will continue to occur. And for people like Gary Bauer, who would like to see the world remain the same, these must be very upsetting times.
There is, you're suggesting, a natural ebb and flow in opinion on controversial issues, and this is a bottoming out.
Well, I don't know if it's a bottoming out, but we have seen over the decades, every time there has been progress made, whether it was a court decision or a local law passed, it has inspired people who oppose gay rights to step forward and state their opinions strongly. For example, in 1978, when Anita Bryant, the singer and orange juice commercial lady, launched her campaign called Save Our Children. It was in response to lots of gay rights successes at that time. So we will see people rise up in opposition as progress is made. But I don't think it reflects the general opinions in the culture. I think what's more emblematic of changing opinions and changing feelings is to look at what's on television today.
Well, we're going to be talking about that later. But right now, I wanted to ask you about the opening this fall of the Harvey Milk High School in New York City for gay, lesbian, and transgender students. This is obviously going to be a controversial issue as well.
Neil, I love your show, so I hate to correct you. And NPR reported this story first back in 1985. The Harvey Milk School opened in 1985. It's been around for a long time. And what is happening now is the school is being expanded. Instead of being two rooms in the back of the Hetrick Martin Institute, which is a social service agency and advocacy organization here in New York that works to protect the lives of gay and lesbian youth, it will now be in a larger space that will more appropriately accommodate a larger student population. A lot of the upset has been that this is being announced as something new, and and these kids are being pulled out of schools and put into this special program and its special treatment. And that's not the case. The Harvey Milk School was set up for gay and lesbian kids as an alternative high school. These are kids who had trouble in their local high schools, many of whom had already dropped out. So this is a way to get these kids educated where they might not have been otherwise. It's not special treatment. It's an opportunity for kids who deserve an education to have one until we reach a time when gay and lesbian kids are not harassed at school. And it's not all gay and lesbian kids who feel they need to go to an alternative high school. These are certain kids who are harassed the most. And we all went to school, so we all know that there were some kids who were picked on who are gay and lesbian, who exhibited a lot of the stereotypical characteristics we associate with gay and lesbian people. These kids are the ones who take the most abuse, and it's a place like the Harvey Milk School that allows them to have the safe environment where they can get the education that all kids deserve.
Well, joining us now is Anthony Perret. He's the chair of the Department of Integrated Studies in the School of Education at McGill University, and he joins us from his office in Montreal in Canada. And welcome.
Thank you.
Do you think, I do stand corrected, and this may not be new, but simply the relocation. But a high school for gay students, is that a good idea?
Well, certainly your other guest on makes an excellent case for it, and I approve of all of the justification that he gives. I would have some concern. I suspect others would share the concern about any form of segregation for any particular part of the population. I'm in favor of public access, full wide public access to all schools for all students. I think that a case can be made, as I said, your previous guest has made a good case, for a situation in which a particular part of the population that is receiving poor education or is marginalized in educational circumstances, a case can be made for them receiving some kind of special concern. I would always be anxious that this would then allow us to say, oh, good, we don't have to solve the problem from which those students suffered originally. We can continue to segregate or isolate students who are in difficult circumstances, and there's no question that gay and lesbian students are more likely to be the victims of violence than other kinds of students. But if isolating them it leads us to ignore the problem, the larger problem, the real problem in public schools, then I think we're avoiding it rather than dealing with it. I also have a second concern, which is that if you identify a group of people as gay and lesbian and throw them into this category, it ignores all the other things they are. So that any kind of identity politics makes me anxious because it reduces the possibility of creating solidarity or creating connections for these people in other ways, where they have a sameness or a commonality with people who aren't gay and lesbian. You've taken away from them perhaps that opportunity to make connections in other parts of their identity.
So what's a better way to deal with it?
Well, I think this perhaps is a little utopian, but the best way to deal with it is you deal with the problem of violence against gay and lesbian students where it happens, which is in the general population, and you deal with it by increasing education on issues related to sexual orientation, something which I think, by the way, is happening. Certainly, I find my own children, both of whom, by the way, went to alternative schools, so I'm not against alternative schools, but they are certainly way more insightful, educated, tolerant about this than my generation was. So I see a tremendous improvement there, and much of that is because of education in public schools. So I'd say you deal with the problem of violence or alienation for gay and lesbian students by increasing as much as possible the attention to it, not as much as possible, as much as necessary, the attention to it in schools. You educate the kids who are causing the violence. And again, if you remove the population that they're acting against, then you perhaps remove the opportunity for them to act against that population until sometime later when they're out of school and other circumstances. So it doesn't solve the problem in the long run.
We have a comment on this from John Ewing, who's sent us an email from Sacramento, California. As a gay person myself, I can say from personal experience that learning to deal with the harassment was an important skill to develop. The harassment, he notes, does not end at graduation.
Right.
Yes. Well,
Eric Marcus, go ahead. Yeah,
I agree. It's important to learn to deal with that, and I had to deal with that as well as I got older. But we're not talking about a population where someone calls a kid by a name in a hallway. We're talking about kids who get beat up. We're not talking about minor marginalization, and we're also not talking about all gay and lesbian kids in the New York City school system. This is a small population of students who have been harassed to the extent where it's impossible for them to get a good education. I agree with your guest in Canada that we absolutely have to do what we need to do to get kids educated so that gay and lesbian kids feel safe enough to remain in their own schools and don't feel compelled to drop out. But should these kids be sacrificed, these kids who are harassed the most and have an alternative, should these kids be sacrificed while we take our time educating kids across the country? And the fact is that a lot of these kids won't be educated because they live in places where their parents won't permit them to learn about gay and lesbian folks and where school administrators will not stop harassment. I get emails from kids about this, and it's mm-hmm. tragic.
Let's get a listener's question on this. Armando joins us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
One of the things that I agree with the second person that was talking, I forget their names now.
That's Anthony Perret, who's in Canada, yes.
Anthony, yes. I agree that definitely we do not need another type of alternative school for gays. Definitely the problem is needs to be faced head on in teaching people diversity. With the Civil Rights Act, they didn't segregate African Americans from the white children. They made them go to school together and face the issues, not just say, okay, here's the problem, and kind of skirt away from the problem.
Certainly a difficult transition as well. Erica, how do you respond to that?
Well, I just wonder, what do you do with the kids, like many of the kids at the Harvey Milk School, who would not have had a high school education otherwise? What do you do with these kids if they are in communities or in schools where they're simply not accepted, where they go to school every day and are harassed and are beaten, and change won't come fast enough for them? So should we leave them behind while we solve the problems as we grown-ups try to solve the problems? There has to be a place for kids like that to find a proper education. And they're not getting educated simply on gay issues when they go to a place like the Harvey Milk School. These are high school kids who finally have the opportunity to be regular high school students, where they can simply study without fear of being harassed or beaten up every day they go to school.
Armando, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Okay, I just wanted to say one more thing. What makes a regular person? In our society, there's so many different views and opinions that what defines regular? Thank you.
Okay, Armando, we appreciate it. And Anthony Perret, we appreciate your time today as well.
Thank you very much.
Anthony Perret is chair of the Department of Integrated Studies at McGill University. He spoke with us today from his offices in Montreal. When we return from a short break, we're going to continue our conversation with Eric Marcus, who's the author of Making Gay History, The Half-Century Fight for Lesbian and Gay Equal Rights. He's with us from our bureau in New York. We're also going to be taking more of your calls and your emails. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing issues surrounding gay life, marriage, religion, education, legal and cultural issues that about gay and lesbian rights that converged on the front pages of many newspapers today. Our guest is Eric Marcus, the author of Making Gay History, The Half-Century Fight for Lesbian and Gay Equal Rights. And, of course, you're invited to join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to Tim, who joins us now from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Tim.
Thank you very much. I just have a few comments. We operate a greeting card company, and we've been doing it for about 12 years, and we sell nationally, and the way that people interpret our cards 10 or 12 years ago versus how they do now has changed, and we find that, you know, mainstream America, some very, you know, hallmarks and whatnot are now accepting some of our humor, where before it was sort of a little taboo or maybe, you know, off limits.
How much has the market changed in the past years?
Well, you know, our company has grown and grown and grown, and what we don't do is sort of put it in everyone's face. We make it very comfortable how we present the gay innuendo, and a lot of people have chosen our humor to, let's say, come out to their family or to friends or to, you know, sort of drop hints, I suppose. But I think it's changed dramatically. You know, we see it on, you know, with Will and Grace and sort of what gets by on network television now. Same thing is sort of happening in the greetings industry. People are smarter than they're given credit for, and they want some humor that sort of diffuses the problem rather than sort of antagonizes it.
What kind of reaction do you get?
It's all over the board, but the kind of humor that we do sells to 18-year-olds to 88-year-olds. I could tell you any number of stories, emails that we get, thousands of emails. One in particular, a little woman, probably in her 70s or 80s, took one of the gay innuendo cards and had to do with a fireman and ran it around the store and had to show everybody in the store. And I think, you know, it's a really, really good thing. Yeah, there are some stereotypes thrown in with it, but, you know, it sort of makes everyone step back and sort of just laugh rather than go off, I guess.
Eric Marcus, I was wondering if I get your reaction.
Well, I think what you're seeing in the case of a greeting card company that deals with gay and lesbian humor is that we've reached a moment where there's a tipping point, where the majority of Americans now know someone in their family who's gay, someone at work, someone in the community, their neighbor, and they've come to realize that we're not scary people. We're not some strange oddity. I was out with a friend at dinner the other night, and he was asking me, a non-gay friend, he was asking lots of questions because he's simply curious. So now that people realize that we're not sick, sinful, or something dangerous, they're curious about how we live. And I think they're sometimes disappointed to find that we're often just as boring as they are. But in many ways, they think of our lives as somewhat exotic, or at least on television, our lives seem more fresh because they're different.
And if I can jump in here for a second, that probably the thing that makes this most interesting is we are definitely not a gay and lesbian greeting card company. Probably 85% of our customer base is mainstream America, and they're taking this humor and using it like in just regular humor. I mean, mm-hmm. Mother and my father, 70, you know, mid-70s, get this and will give it to their farmer friends in Minnesota. You know, it's. I think it's just sort of how you present it if you're gonna, you know, make it so, again, in your face that, you know, this makes it a bit more palatable.
Well, Tim, thanks very much, and good luck with the company.
All right, well, thank you.
Appreciate it. In the papers, pundits argue over whether gays should be allowed to marry. In churches, elders argue about what roles they can hold in the clergy. But on television, it's gays who are arguing over how best to clean up a heterosexual world one straight guy at a time.
So I went through your closet. Yep. And what I did is I put all the stuff that's not workable on the floor, and then I hung the good stuff. Do you remember the gap in 85? If you don't, here's a visual. Gap in 86.
I know.
Gap in 87. Oh, in 88. What a year.
You don't like that?
It's quite a year for oatmeal.
A clip from the new Bravo series Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, five gay men living out varying levels of stereotype make over a fashion-impaired straight man to much amusement. The same network is also debuting the first gay reality TV show, Boy Meets Boy. Joining us now from her home in Princeton, New Jersey, to talk about the past and future image of gays on television is Diane Wirtz, a reviewer and columnist for New York Newsday, and good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be back.
Tell us about these two new shows.
Well, they're very interesting because they sort of take for granted that, you know, gays are here and they're part of life. They're not really portrayed as something exotic or weird, although there certainly is a distinction made between who's straight and who's gay. But they really just sort of accept it as a part of life and go on, which may be why it's upsetting to some people who don't find that to be a normal part of life.
They have been criticized as being stereotypical.
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting in TV is we've gone from, you know, the original sort of, I guess you'd say, bleeding heart sort of notion that, you know, oh, gays are just like us. They're all exactly the same as us for straights,
mm-hmm.
to more of a consumption of, yeah, they're gay and they're proud and sometimes they're different and we don't deny the differences. They're just there and move on. I mean, I think that's a really interesting shift in attitude.
Television, as you know, it has come a long way, even over the course of a few years. When I think it was Hal Holbrook who played the first gay character on TV, then Roseanne's gay kiss was huge news on the screen.
Right. All of those things were just enormous. And 30-something, I think, at one point had advertisers pull out because they showed two gay guys in bed together. I don't think they even kissed or touched, really. But we've moved way past that now, and it's not just for sort of shock value anymore. We've gone past the sort of first, and we're moving into a phase where we're going to see how it all shakes out.
It's interesting. Gay characters on shows like the ones we're talking about, and as well as you know, the sitcoms, Will and Grace, gay characters on Friends, too, they never seem to face any discrimination. Have all the great gay rights battles been won in television land?
Well, it's interesting. This fall, there's a new sitcom on ABC called It's All Relative, where the daughter of a couple of gay guys, the adult daughter, is marrying into this sort of very conservative Boston Irish bar-owning family who just doesn't get it. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays. That does seem to play into a lot of stereotypes, at least of, you know, who's liberal and who's not. And it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Mm-hmm. So is this simply... you know, a fashion, a rage, you know, an interest of television producers. They see that some gay-themed shows have been successful, so they're going to keep on doing it. And is it just a fad, I guess?
Well, some of it is. I mean, obviously, the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I think, sort of came out of nowhere in the same way as Survivor and American Idol and further back, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where now, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of shows that are like that because if TV does nothing else, it imitates very well. But generally, the first show is the one that gets it right, and the others are just imitators. I think we'll probably see a spate of them, but I don't know how many will last. In terms of drama and sitcoms, it's interesting that even though there's one sitcom this fall really hitting the issue head-on, I can't remember any gay characters from any other of the new fall shows. So I would think the issue would be, you know, do gay characters have to be gay, or can they just be characters at some point?
Diane Wirtz, thanks very much.
Sure.
Diane Wirtz, a reviewer and columnist for New York Newsday, and she was with us from her home in Princeton, New Jersey. And Eric Marcus, you know, she makes an interesting point that we've passed that first hurdle of firsts.
Well, there have been so many firsts over the years. I remember the first talk show when somebody was on. Actually, that dates way back, in fact, to the 1950s. But the ones I remember were in the 1970s and 80s, and everyone would call. You'd call your gay friends and say, guess what's going to be on Donahue today? Or guess what's going to be on Family? There's going to be a gay character. And now there's so much on television, you know, I don't even want to know everything that's on. But much of it isn't very good. But then again, much of television isn't very good. My favorite portrayal of gay people is on 6 Feet Under. I think they get gay people head on, and they also get non-gay people head on that show,
mm-hmm.
Which is a rare thing for television. But the reviewer made a comment about stereotypes, and I think something we like to overlook or try to, or people have tried to in the past, the stereotypes don't come from nowhere. Some gay people are exactly as you see them on the Queer Eye for a Straight Guy show. So gay people come in all kinds of stripes. In the early days of when gay people first started showing up on television, There was a lot of upset about the kind of person who was portrayed, because so much was invested in that one character. That one character had to represent all gay people. Now we see every possible type of gay person on television. So those characters aren't, and people don't invest in those characters in the same way they once did.
It should also be noted there have been a few people to criticize, particularly network television, for stereotyping straight people as well.
All the time. I like to say we now see equal opportunity stupidity on television in the way that gay people and non-gay people are portrayed.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address TOTN@npr.org. We're discussing the convergence of a number of gay-related issues, from TV shows to gay marriage. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Randy, who joins us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Hi.
Good afternoon. How are you, Jim?
Okay, Randy. How are you?
We're just fine here. I just wanted to say we have a gay member in my family, and I do believe that a lot of this has to do with the media perception, as Diane just mentioned, and everything. I will say that I always thought that Ernie Kovacs with Percy Dovetails and Louie Nye on Steve Allen, Hi-Ho, Steve Arito, were the first people that really, you know, acknowledged to network television that there were gay people out there. I'm one of these people. I'm really actually proud that gays and lesbians have become more and more acceptable in modern American society. But I don't think gay marriage is going to happen anytime soon.
Why not?
Several reasons. Most people don't, you know, if you've covered, you know, when you talk about, you know, our current situation in Iraq and the war and all that other, compared to most European nations, we're a very religious nation. I think that the gay and lesbian acceptance has, you know, is really, really coming a long, long way. But that last border, because, you know, truthfully for me, gay marriage is an oxymoron. It's a societal deal that does not mean that two people of the same sex cannot love each other and have a relationship that will last, you know, many times longer than most regular marriages. I mean,
yeah. Would you support it if it were civil union of some sort rather than the word marriage? Is that the problem for you?
I would, because I have gay friends. I have gay friends that have been together that have a commitment ceremony, some that I have attended, where they proclaim their love for each other, which is, you know, fine. But I do not believe, and with the media thing, so you have to realize your source. Now, we talked about the school in New York, the Harvey Milk School.
Mm-hmm.
You guys broke that how long ago, Neil?
Well, I'm told we broke it in 1985, though apparently my institutional memory is full of holes.
Okay, well, today it was on the Today Show and Good Morning America, which are basically the same shows with different hosts, as I'm sure you well know. And it's thrown out there as a look what they're doing in New York City. And my first response was, truthfully, I will tell you, I don't know if this is a good idea or not. Eric has some excellent points on, you know, because when I was a kid, I was skinny, and I got picked on, and all of a sudden I got big and started playing football, and I was very popular. So I can understand that. I just don't know about the putting them in a situation where they really don't have a chance, even though I understand that Harvey Milk School is open to straight students also. But who's going to send their kid there?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to work out, because they will be separated. Maybe when the, you know, maybe the thinking is, I don't know, and I've got a thought that I don't think anybody else has thought of. You know, it's not my problem. I live in Florida. It's not my concern. It's the people in New York City, the school boards in New York City, the educators in New York City, that have made this decision. For, you know, and I'm sure that this wasn't something that they just, you know, went out to lunch and said, okay, we're going to do this. And I think that's another problem with media coverage in our society in general. Is because it's in New York City, or if it's in Sacramento, or if it's in Garrison, North Dakota, and something happens, it's everybody's business. But it's not. We don't live there. We don't pay the taxes. We don't send our people to those schools.
Well, thank you very much for that call, Randy. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Eric Marcus, I wanted to let you have a chance to
respond. I'm sorry, Neil. I'm chomping at the bit here.
No, I understand. But I wanted to put it in the context of Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is supporting a constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriages nationwide. The Bush administration looking for ways to strengthen the Defense of Marriage Act. So if you'd put the answer in that context.
Well, this is a potent issue. And I think they see this I'm sure they firmly believe this, or many of them do, but they also see it as a potent political issue that will divide Americans and help their support in the upcoming election in 2004. It's very interesting to hear your caller say that he's all for gay people having civil unions, but not marriage. Well, if you don't want to call it marriage, then give gay and lesbian people all the same exact civil rights that non-gay people have when they marry, but call it something else, as long as it's exactly the same, and then we'll have equal rights. But it's as people do get caught up in this issue of marriage. They associate it with religion, and a civil union or civil marriage has nothing to do with religion. Churches can do whatever they like. When you get a wedding license, it's not being sanctioned by the church unless you decide to have your church sanction it. We've seen other places in the world where gay and lesbian people are allowed to marry, and society has not come tumbling down. The change will come slowly. I think it will come more slowly here than in Canada because this is indeed a more religious place. But we can look just across the border and see how things happen there, and I don't think anything dramatic will happen except that you'll see lots of gay and lesbian people lead their lives just like everybody else, and they will have the same legal rights as everyone else.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to read this email we got from Gary Scott. I am straight, white male with several friends and family members who are gay, though I don't necessarily accept their lifestyle. I am extremely tolerant of it. I am also an atheist, and I know full well that a very large part of society would neither accept nor tolerate my views. Therefore, I am very discreet about my beliefs. In my opinion, that's where many of the gay rights folks go wrong. They wear their sexual orientation on their sleeves and expect everyone in society to accept it. The best they can hope for is that most of society will tolerate it. There's a difference between the two. Discretion in all things is the better part of valor. Eric, I only have 30 seconds for you, but go ahead.
I just wonder what he's referring to when he says gay people wear their sexual orientation on their sleeves. Heterosexual people wear their sexual orientation on their sleeves all the time, and they wear them on their fingers when they wear wedding rings. So I don't accept that distinction. We should just simply be allowed to live our lives the way everyone else does, and right now we have to be pretty loud about it to get that done.
Eric Marcus, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Neil.
Eric Marcus, the author of Making Gay History, the Half-Century Fight for Lesbian and Gay Equal Rights. He joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, Dr. Harold Jaffe of the Centers for Disease Control will talk to us about some new numbers that say HIV is going up in some groups of Americans. We'll take your calls on that, too. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.